Senate State Affairs to order. Let the record reflect that it is 4 p.m. Thursday, March 9th. Present today are Senator Wilkowski, myself, Chair Kawasaki. Vice Chair Klayman is on his way briefly. We don't have quorum to conduct business, but we will not have to move a bill until toward the end of the meeting. I'd like to remind members and testifiers that all questions and comments must be directed through the chair. And before testifying, please clearly state your name, title, and affiliation for the record. With us today from Senate Records is Carrie Cooper-Eider, and our teleconference moderator with the Legislative Information Office is Zachary Mawhorn. On today's agenda, we will bring before us the new director of the Division of Elections, Carol Beecher, to talk about some of the election-related topics that were discussed at the prior meeting. We will, when we do get a quorum, ask the will of the committee on Senate Joint Resolution Number 6 relating to the Korea-Alaska relationship, and see that bill to be moved if we can. Finally, we will have just a continuation of the introduction from Senate Bill 1 from Senator Mike Schauer and his aide, Scott Ogan. So, are there any questions of the committee bill at this time? Okay, seeing none. If we could have Division Director Beecher and whoever else she'd like to bring forward. And I'd just like to apologize for starting here a little bit late and welcome you to the Senate State Affairs Committee. And I guess if you want to just start introducing yourself and whoever else you'd like to introduce, maybe just give us like a quick rundown of yourself, just because you're new to the position. And then we've got a series of questions that we did give you yesterday. Sorry, we had until the end of yesterday and we sent them in yesterday night. So I know not all of them are completed, which is just fine. But we thank you again, once again, for being here.
Thank you.
Director Beecher.
For the record, my name is Carol Beecher. I'm the director of the Alaska Division of Elections. And I have with me on my staff today, sitting at the front table, Lori Wilson. And Lori is the Region 1 supervisor of the Region 1 office. I also have online available Michaela Thompson, who is the division. Their title? Division.
Operations.
I'm sorry.
Administrative Operations Manager.
Yes. And then Tom Flynn, our attorney, is also available. And we also have available Carol Thompson, who is Division
Operations
Manager. Okay. And we appreciate the opportunity to speak to the elections process and to answer the questions we were able to answer from what we received yesterday. If you'd like a little background.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you, Director.
Sure. I've lived in Alaska pretty much my whole life, southeast. I grew up on an island, Gulls Rumble Island, down south of Wrangell. And I went to high school, junior high and high school in Wrangell. Got married, 4 kids, and I eventually ended up getting my degree at UAA, bachelor's and then a master's in public administration. Started working for the state in approximately 2006 and have just had a variety of different roles and just started this one earlier this year.
Great. Thank you. Please continue.
Chair Kawasaki, do you want me to start with the questions and I can...
Yeah, actually... let me start with a question further down the list. The first couple questions on the top were by Senator Klayman, who's not here yet. So I think if we could just maybe start with if Senator Wilkowski maybe want to start with a question that's or any question, really. Some questions are from his office as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming to the committee today. And I mentioned this at the last meeting, the concerns that have been raised in the public, and as you know, there have been comments in the public, and in legislative committees that the 2020 and 2022 elections were, quote, rigged or, quote, fraudulent. Does the Division of Elections believe this to be the case?
Through the chair, Senator Welikowski, the division can only speak to the elections that occur in Alaska, and we do not we have not seen any evidence of this in Alaska.
Thank you.
Okay.
And then, thank you. And then there was some testimony at the last hearing about the Dominion voting machines, concerns that software in our election system somehow enables vote rigging and fraudulent counts. Does the Division of Elections believe that to be the case, or do you believe there's any evidence that that's the case?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, the division can only speak to the machines that we are using in Alaska and our own elections, and we have not seen any evidence of this in Alaska.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Continue? Okay. So can you just talk about the Dominion technology that is used for the voting machines, and I guess how that's different than other technology that might be out there, and how does that compare to other voting machines the state has previously used?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, unfortunately, we did not have a chance to fully answer that question, but we will provide that back to the committee in writing.
Thank you. And then can you talk a little bit about how voter recounts and voter intent adjudication work with the Dominion software?
Trying to see where.
That's that fourth one on my list.
Number eight. Oh, and that was another question through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that we will provide an answer to that question in writing for you.
And then, so special needs ballots were rejected at a much higher rate than absentee ballots. In the 2022 general election, 8% of the special needs ballots were rejected, while only 1.3% of the mail ballots were rejected. Can you talk about how special need ballots are treated differently than absentee ballots?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the statutory requirements for the special needs ballots do appear to lead to more non-compliant ballots. And the statute that spells out how we deal with those ballots requires that the personal representative has to complete all of the sections on the application and be the witness. And so if anything is lacking, the statute requires that the ballot not be counted. So we believe that that is because of the statutory requirements, it can result in more rejections.
Does the division have any advice for the legislature? I think many people would agree an 8% rejection rate is high. Any suggestions for us legislatively on how we can make it so that not as many ballots are rejected for special needs?
Through the chair, if I may, I would call on Michaela Thompson to answer that, as she deals with these ballots and has much more knowledge on it than I do at this point.
Great. Ms. Thompson, are you online?
Yes. For the record, this is Michaela Thompson. I'm with the Division of Elections. Through the chair, Senator, we would need to have the changes made to the statutes in order to really change what we can or cannot count with the special needs ballots. There'd have to be a change to that.
Senator Wilikowski.
Can an otherwise valid special needs ballot be rejected because of mistakes made by a representative or poll workers?
Through the chair, Senator, normally if there's a poll worker error, the Division of Elections, we normally, because of a poll worker error, a ballot usually is not rejected. And Tom Flynn might have, the Department of Law may have a little bit more information to kind of give insight on this.
Do we have someone from the Department of Law, Mr. Chairman?
We sure do. We have Mr. Flynn from the Department of Law, Assistant Attorney General, calling in from Anchorage. Mr. Flynn, are you online?
Yes, hi, this is Tom Flynn at the Department of Law. So the question is about special needs ballots and particularly mistakes by poll workers. Usually the poll workers aren't representatives for special needs voters, it's someone else. And so there aren't usually mistakes by poll workers in that instance, but a mistake by a personal representative in the special needs ballot scheme, according to statute, could invalidate a ballot, yes.
Senator Wilikowski? Okay, we have a question from Senator Klayman. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Appreciate your tolerance on scheduling challenges. I had some questions. We were this whole postage question. So I was interested to know how much did the Postal Service charge the Division of Elections for some of the mail-in ballots in 2022? And I actually have it for, there's the three different elections, and then the total, if you have the information, first would be the June special election, how much you got a postage due bill for June, how much postage due for the August primary, how much postage due for the November general election, and then the total of all three, if you have that.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, the United States Postal Service did not charge the division anything for any of the postage due ballots that may have come in. So we did not get billed on that.
Okay. And follow
up? Follow up.
And any reason to think now that we're in March that you may see a bill?
According to my financial staff, we have never seen a bill in previous elections in previous years. So no, we do not anticipate that.
Okay. Follow up.
Yep. Senator,
so actually, somewhat in contrast to what we were hearing from the invited testimony, who was more associated with the Postal Service, who believed there was bills being sent. Historically, the ballots have always been delivered, even if they didn't have a sufficient postage, and we've never received a bill.
Through the chair, to my knowledge, that is correct, Senator Klayman. I would also direct you to the United States Post Office Publication 632, and in that, which is a guide, then they do say that they will not return a ballot to the sender, but that they will charge the agency.
Okay. And then the follow-up.
Senator Klayman.
A different question. I was asking this before. Have you been able to identify the Postal Service regulation that says exactly what you just said, that they won't return it to the sender, but they will deliver it to the Division of Elections?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, it's in publication 632, which is a guideline. We have not located a specific regulation.
Okay. And then I think the last question, or a couple of questions, if that's all right, Mr.
Yep.
Chair. One of the folks at the last hearing made mention about postage paid return envelopes and stamped envelopes, and that there may be impact on ballot tracking depending on how it's done, and I didn't really understand that comment, so I wanted a little more information about if ballot tracking were enacted, how that is affected by either postage paid or stamped ballots.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I will refer you to Michaela Thompson to respond to those questions.
Ms. Thompson, are you available?
Yes, I am. Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I cannot speak exactly on how postage paid may affect ballot tracking, because personally, it's your experience, because we've not really experienced that in Alaska. I can tell you about what happens currently. The division is able to track outgoing via USPS tracking, but right now we are unable to track incoming back to the USPS. We do have our My Voter information tool for voters currently, which does provide information for voters to check their ballot application status, their ballot sent date, and their mailing address, and also when their ballot has been returned to a regional election office. But we do not currently have a tracking for returning it back to the division office.
Senator Klayman?
And when you talk about an ability to track essentially the absentee ballot that gets mailed to a voter, that tracking, is that just basically regular United States Postal Service tracking, or is that something different?
Through the chair, Senator Clayman, we use an intelligent mail barcode, which is just what the USPS uses for tracking mail on the outgoing, and we're able to easily spray that onto the label of the absentee ballot envelope. It's just a lot of vendors don't have the capability to do the intelligent mail barcode for the return tracking label, because it has to be associated with that voter and that mailing address for the voter, and it's very difficult to put that on the other side of the envelope while also spraying the other side too. So it's just logistically a difficult process to do.
Follow up, Senator Clayman.
So that if I understand accurately, it's easy because you're integrating with existing systems to track using essentially the Postal Service method to track something that goes from your division to my house. But if I tried, but it's hard to come up with a way to make the envelope that comes from my house back to the division. That's much more difficult to create the unique envelope to come from my house back to the division.
Through the chair, Senator Clayman, that is correct. Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Clayman. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So one of the other questions we had submitted was regarding the municipality as part of their legislative program had asked that the Division of Elections share voter emails and phone numbers with municipalities for elections purposes. They believe that this action can be taken at the discretion of the director and does not require statutory regulatory changes. Does the Department of or Division of Elections concur? And will you agree to share this information with the municipalities for election purposes?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, at this point, the division doesn't collect the information in our system. It is collected, the phone number and the email addresses are on the physical registration forms, and we have to manually look at those forms to get the information, the applications. But so we only use it to clarify registration information or absentee application information. So at this juncture, we would not be able to easily provide that information to the municipality. If we were directed, of course, we would take figure out a way to make it work. But at this point, it would not be an easy lift.
Senator Wilikowski,
and you said if you were directed, would that be by legislation?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Wilikowski.
One of the issues that we saw in Anchorage was election drop boxes. And I know in the past there have been over a dozen drop boxes that were available for people to put their ballot in. I know the municipality of Anchorage has a huge number. My understanding is they offered to share those drop boxes, make them available for the Division of Elections to use in this last election, and they were, the division said no, they weren't interested. As you know, Anchorage is a large city the size of Delaware. Is the division open to having a sharing agreement with the municipality of Anchorage and with other municipalities for the sharing of drop boxes?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I will ask Julie, Lori, to answer
that
question.
That's okay.
Lori Wilson, welcome to
Thank
the committee.
You. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we did borrow the municipality of Anchorage's drop boxes, plus CBJ here locally had some that we could borrow, or one that we borrowed. We also, I believe we shipped one to, at the time I had oversight of the KPB area as well, we shipped one down there to Saldatna, but we don't, they're heavy, they're large, we don't have enough, the municipality doesn't have enough for us to ship them across the entire state, so we had them in select areas that we could easily get them to, or that the municipalities had them available for us to use, and we did that, I believe that was in the 2020 election, and it was part of it was due to COVID, so that we could make it easier for voters to drop their ballot off without having to come inside one of the division offices or go into the post office.
Senator Wilikowski.
So, in 2020 there was seemed to be a lot more opportunity for people to drop their ballots in different spots. And do you know how many ballot boxes or ballot drop-off locations were available in 2022 in Anchorage?
We'd have to research that. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't recall. Sorry, through the chair, Senator Wielkowski. I don't recall the exact number that we had around the Anchorage area. I know I had one in Saldotna and one in here in Juneau, and they had maybe two or three in the Anchorage area, but I can't confirm that for sure.
And if good, Mr. Chair, and that's my understanding, is there were like three in Anchorage. Anchorage is a pretty large city or municipality when you go, you know, Chugiak all the way down to Girdwood. And my understanding, again, is that the municipality was saying that they had drop boxes that they would be willing to let the state use. Why wouldn't the state use those drop boxes to make it easier, as you just said? You made it easier for people to vote in 2020. Why wouldn't you make it easier for people to vote in 2022?
Through the chair, Senator Wielkowski, I think that at the time the director's decision was that we couldn't put them in every community, that there were other communities that wanted one. We didn't have accessibility for those to put them there. We didn't have enough boxes to put them there. They're heavy and expensive to move around when we had to transport them down to the KPB and places like that. And so we also, though, have absentee voting locations, many over 100 and over 120 around the state, much more than that, of where people can drop their absentee ballot off to. They're a by-mail ballot. They can drop it off at any voting location on election day. They can drop it off at any early voting location and have it be accepted there, or any absentee in-person voting official that we have, which many are around city clerk's offices around the state.
Senator Wielkowski, different topic, Mr. Chairman. Can you talk about the steps that the division takes to verify witness signatures?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, Chairman Kawasaki, Senator Wielkowski, sorry. I will turn that one over to Michaela.
Michaela Thompson, are you online?
Yes, I'm here. Chairman, in regards to witnessing, what the division does is during the review board process, they essentially check to see that a signature is in the witness area. And so they just check to make sure that area is filled out completely.
Great, Senator Wielkowski.
So correct me if I'm wrong here, but so legally or the way the division, so back in 2020, I'm going to step back for a minute. The witness signature was waived for mail ballots, and this resulted in significantly lower mail ballot rejection rates. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator, I do not have the reject rates from the 2020 elections directly in front of me, so I could not tell you 100% of that's true, but we can certainly get those rejection rates to you here at a later time.
Follow-up, Senator.
Yeah, am I correct in saying, and I believe it was a court that ordered it, that the witness requirements were, a judge said you couldn't enforce the witness requirements in the 2020 general election. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator, the court did rule to temporarily suspend that requirement.
Did the Division of Elections see any evidence that there were fraudulent mail ballots that were counted in that election as a result of that ruling?
Through the chair, Senator, there has been no evidence of that we have found.
And then the division this past election, when there was not a court order in effect, rejected ballots that didn't have a witness signature on it. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, that is correct, because we did have to go back to what the law requires.
And going back to the question asked before, there was no requirement to verify that there was an actual witness that there was no verification of the witness signature. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator, we do check that a signature is in that area of the return of the ballot envelope. So that part is checked by the review board.
Okay. But that signature, I mean, somebody could have signed it Mickey Mouse there was no verification that it was an actual person or an actual voter or an actual person over 18, was there?
Through the chair, Senator, we do not independently verify that witnesses are over 18. Essentially, the witnesses are agreeing to tell the truth on the absentee ballot, and that false statements can be a crime under, I think it's statute 1556040.
Has any witness ever been charged or anybody ever been charged with falsifying a witness signature?
Through the chair, Senator, I would like to have Tom Flynn answer that question. He'd have more information about that aspect.
Mr. Tom Flynn, welcome to the committee again.
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, this is Tom Flynn again. Not to my knowledge, but I'd certainly have to double check.
Senator Wilikowski. Does the absentee by mail envelope require the witness to print their full name or provide their date of birth?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, this is Tom again. No, it does not. They don't have to provide that other.
Does the Department of Law or the Division of Elections see any problem with the fact that you're requiring people to have witnesses and you're rejecting ballots for not having a witness, but there's absolutely no problem at all with the fact that you don't know what the person's name is, you don't know what their date of birth is. You don't know. I mean, basically, you have a witness requirement, but there's no way of enforcing it. Do you see any issues with that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I mean, if the law were different, it would be implemented differently, as evidenced by the 2020 election. But as it is, it requires a witness signature, and that's what the division looks for.
Okay. I actually did have a question. Okay, I'll get to that. I did have a question regarding the boxes that are available outside. I guess if the division – so in 2020, we did have a box that was available, and I think it came from Anchorage, and it was available right outside the Division of Elections office on 7th Avenue. And we've got four – I'll just tell you how it goes. We have four or five parking spots there. There's two handicap spots, three spots that say 15 minutes or less. And so we'd have a person come in, basically drop their ballot off in the box, and then they'd be gone. And that would happen. When they didn't in 2022, what it meant was they would have to go inside to the office, and it would take a lot. You know, there's no parking right in front of the facility, so they'd actually have to walk. And I imagine that the number of people that actually would do that declined quite a bit, and so because receiving those would take a lot longer. My question to you, Director Beecher, is whether it would need to be in regulation or law that boxes be made available to voters. I guess whether boxes would be available to voters if it were provided by the state, or if that would be something that you would be amenable to if it were in law.
Chairman Kawasaki, it is the desire of the division that everyone who is eligible to vote is able to vote, and that we make it easy and convenient. But we also have to be concerned about the uniform application of the ability to vote across the state, and having those boxes available in all of the different regions presents quite a challenge. I can get back to you with the information. I have heard some things about having to have somebody who basically checks it every day, that we can't just leave ballots in them. I'm not sure, but there could be rules associated that played into that. It was clearly before the time I was here, but we can certainly look into that to see what we can do to make it more convenient if we're able to do that.
Thank you. Senator Klayman.
I wanted to just return briefly to the inquiry that Senator Wilikowski was making about sharing information, emails, and phone numbers with municipalities. Right now, that's not something that you put into your database when somebody sends in a voter registration or registers to vote. Is it not put into the database because right now the statute doesn't include email and phone number in the list of things that you're supposed to maintain?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I'm going to punt that one to Michaela again.
That's fine.
Through the chair, Senator Klieman, could you please repeat your question?
Is the reason that the emails and phone numbers of voters are not kept on the database but are just in the hard copy because the statute doesn't include those as in the information that the division is required to maintain?
Through the chair, Senator Klieman, the division doesn't really use the phone numbers and emails. We only really use it on an individual basis if we come across an application where we can't read something, like we can't read the apartment number, we would call the voter and follow up with them. It's not really used for anything, and so we've never collected it in the database in that manner.
Senator Klieman.
I understand that you may not use information, but that really doesn't answer my question, because in response to the question of Senator Wilikowski, it was, well, for example, you keep address, street addresses or mailing addresses are kept, and that's because you use those. But my query is it in the statute that requires you to keep that information? And of course, the follow-up would be, if we add to the statute emails and phone numbers as required information, you'd put that in the database even if you don't use it very often. And so my query is the reason it's not in the database because it's currently not in the statute?
Through the chair, Senator Klieman, that is correct. It was my understanding it's not written out in the statute as a requirement for registering to vote.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Klieman. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Voters and poll watchers reported voters being confused by the placement of the write-in line on the new ranked choice ballots and significant ballot spoiling as a result. Is the Division of Elections planning to redesign the ballot for future elections to reduce confusion between the write-in bubble and the last listed candidate?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. The division looks at the ballots to see that clearly there was some confusion with that one and new type of way of voting on that ballot. And so we are always looking at ways to improve the ballot. And if we are looking into that to see if we can fix the design so that it is more intuitive.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question.
Senator Wilikowski.
AS 15-15-370, as amended by the initiative, requires that the precinct results reported no later than the day after the election report the number of votes for each candidate at each rank. But this was not implemented for the 2022 election, and the results tapes only included first place ranks. Was this a technology issue, and does it appears to be a violation of the law, and does the department or division need to what does the division need to be able to comply with this law for future elections?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we were not able to have enough time to provide a full response to that, but we will provide a response to that question to the committee.
Senator Wilikowski.
So there was some confusion. The precinct locations were changed. I know in my district at Nunaka Valley, at Ptarmigan Elementary, people that lived right around the school in Ptarmigan, for example, were forced to vote in Wonder Park. And in Fairbanks, this was the same. There were a consolidation of precincts and the closure of longstanding polling places in Fairbanks resulted in significant voter confusion. I know it happened in my district as well. My office sent letters to the division asking them, notifying them of these concerns, and they were not addressed. And is there any plan by the division to reestablish the traditional precinct voting places in Fairbanks and in East Anchorage?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, at this juncture, we don't have a plan to do that. And my understanding is that is because the way that we determine where the polling places are has to do with the number of the voter turnout is looked at, the population, historical voter actions, and overall ability to get a polling place. But I'm happy to look into that further.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, a different issue. And so there was an article, this is going back a ways, James Brooks in Anchorage Daily News, May 1st, 2022. And it was reporting that there was a voter registration rate of 106% at the time. And And can you talk a little bit about that? And I know that's caused some concern in the public about we have more voters than we have people in the state. How is that possible? Can you talk a little bit about why that is and if the division believes that we need to do anything to change that or fix that?
Through the chair, Senator Wendt-Lilkowski, I can ask Michaela or Carol Thompson to speak on that issue, and then we can also provide more information on that if you'd like to hear what they have to say on that.
For the record, my name is Carol Thompson. I am with the Division of Elections, Division Operations Manager. Senator, through the chair, Senator, so this maintenance law is actually perhaps one of the laws that really is a little bit more strict and for the Division of Elections than actual federal law. So you could look, essentially, we could look at that particular statute and see if there were some improvements that we could do in that area. But we are basically, it's reliant upon undeliverable mail and whether or not that comes back to us during that period of time where we do list maintenance. And we do actually have a pretty good white paper on that that we could send to you all that explains the steps and processes that we do.
And just from my own personal experience, having knocked on many doors over the years, I've knocked on many people's doors, and you'll have a list from the Division of Elections, and someone will answer the door, you have their voting record because that's public information, and it'll show that they've voted in every single election for the last decade, and then the person at the door tells me, oh, they moved away to Texas or Kentucky 10 years ago. They haven't lived here in a decade. How is it that those people are still voting in our elections?
Through the chair, Senator, Alaska has actually a very it's based on attention to return. So the law itself for residency is based on the voter's intention to return to Alaska. And that would be another law that you could possibly look at and to work on that area because it is intentional. The division has no way of knowing what a person intends. We're just if they vote and are claiming that they are a resident and they have intention to return, then they remain.
Senator Wendt-Lilkowski.
And I don't know if you're familiar with other states, but do other states do it this way, or is it Alaska sort of out on our own in how we do this?
Through the chair, Senator, I do believe that there are other states that do that. Tom may have a better understanding of that, but I really don't have a good grip on other states' practices. I suppose we could research that for you if you would like.
I'd be interested. That's a question that comes up over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be interested in seeing some information on that. We can probably check with NCSL or CSG ourselves. Another question, if I could,
Senator Wilkowski.
Same topic, but and I see this all the time too. A person lives in a district. Let's say they live in my district, and then they move over to Senator Klayman's district, but they keep their voter registration in my district. Are they breaking the law by voting in my district when they now live in Senator Klayman's district?
Through the chair, Senator, it's all based upon, again, voter intent. So I don't know if that person would intend to return back to the other senator's district. We have to, when they show up at the polling place and go vote, if they don't inform the poll worker they no longer live at that address, the poll worker is going to let them know they can sign in on the register. If they tell the poll worker they no longer live at that address, then the poll worker can have them vote a question ballot, and that question ballot does allow, or it does have the opportunity for that voter to put down the correct address if they're now living in the other district and want to claim that address as their residence. And at that point, we would update their registration to their new registration after the election or to that new residence address. But their ballot would also be partially counted because they didn't get registered by the 30-day registration deadline.
Senator Wendt-Lilkowski.
We heard some testimony a couple days ago on ERIC, and I guess ERIC, it's, I don't even know what that stands for, some nonprofit organization that deals with voter rolls. Can you talk about what that organization is and whether or not state participates that in that with that organization and believes that that's a legitimate organization that's providing a useful function for the state.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, the state is a member of ERIC at this juncture, and I'm afraid I'm not going to remember what the acronym is either. But I can tell you that we are definitely looking into that. There are some benefits to remaining in it because it does help us with list maintenance. There are also some drawbacks, and so we are looking actively into that, and then we'll proceed accordingly based on the what we find out with what your information we're able to get.
So, no, go ahead, Senator Wilikowski.
I'm just curious what the benefits and what the drawbacks are.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it's a list maintenance opportunity between states, and so I don't know a lot about it, but I know that there are lists that we provide to them and they provide to us, so that it helps us to clean the list. If somebody is registered in another state, then we can begin the process to take them off our rolls. For the death index from Social Security, that we share that information. So it's an information sharing between states to help us clean our voter list.
You said there are drawbacks to it. What are the drawbacks to it?
It's expensive, and we are a small state. So to the degree that it's worth has a value monetarily based on our smaller population and the cleaning it does, are there ways that we could do it better ourselves? Those are the things that we're looking into to see if this is a good return on investment for the state.
Senator Wilikowski.
Is there another service out there that, because I think it's important to clear voters. I mean, obviously, we don't want people voting in two different states. Is there another service that provides the same service as ERIC does?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I do not know the answer to that, but we can certainly look into that, and I'll work with my staff to see what other ones may be out there or have been considered. To my knowledge, nothing to the degree of ERIC at this point, but there could be.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski.
Director, do you have any suggestions or any thoughts on changing the way we run elections in the state of Alaska? Do you have any proposals that you plan to implement for the next election cycle?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, at this point I do not, but I can assure you that I'm looking at all of the processes. I'm very interested in seeing ways that we can do a better job in our rural communities in particular, and just really want to understand the processes. No process is perfect, so this entire administration is very vested in making sure that Alaskans can trust our election process, and that is really, really important. It's important to me personally. Very important to the lieutenant governor and to the governor. So we are actively looking at all of the different processes.
Senator Wilikowski?
Worn him out.
Senator Klayman.
Keep going, but I know we have.
I'll just go
ahead. Senator Klayman.
Just following up on the ERIC discussion. I know kind of in a similar way, I think I always worked on this notion that if you move from state A to state B and you move from, say, Massachusetts to New York and you get a New York driver's license when you arrive, I think people work on this notion that New York calls Massachusetts and say, oh, yeah, you know, Smith doesn't have a license. He now is in New York. Take away his Massachusetts license. I mean, that's what people think happens. And it's for good reason. You would think there's the left hand is always talking to the right hand, and all 50 states communicate with all the other 50 states. But I run into people all the time that say, oh, yeah, I moved to a new state. I got a new license, and now I have two licenses. And no one ever came and asked for the other one. And no one seems to think the license is no longer active. And I just assume I've always worked on the sense that ERIC and some of these other systems are ever to try to address that challenge. And it's not one that lends itself to simple solutions. And am I missing something, or is that really kind of the part of why we participated in ERIC for the period of time we have?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, that is my understanding. We have federal laws that we must adhere to, and time frames of clearing the rolls, trying to keep them as clean as possible. It is an ongoing challenge and ongoing process, and my understanding is that was the genesis of ERIC, was to attempt to get states to work together to make sure that the rolls are and the lists are cleared as often and cleanly as possible.
Follow up,
Senator Klayman.
I would just ask the division that if you start looking at the potential of maybe no longer participating in ERIC, I would urge the division to do pretty detailed research and analysis about what we're going to do instead as an alternative. I mean, it would be, there may be another organization trying to do something similar, but I wouldn't want to just change horses without having a pretty darn good idea about what the new horse is going to offer in terms of the same function and for the same, to the extent if we were going to try to do that as an in-house function rather than work with some collaborative group of other states. I really want to you all to do pretty detailed analysis about the pros and cons of changing, because if somebody says ERIC is imperfect, I bet it's imperfect. The question becomes, do we have a better alternative? And if we were going to switch, do we have confidence that an alternative will actually work better? Because the worst thing to do would be to switch and 3 years later discover that the new system's working very poorly, and it turns out with experience in the new system, ERIC was actually a much better system. You'd rather not be in that place. So just urge the no real answer required, but just urging the division to go carefully.
Great. Are there Senator Wilikowski?
I'll just throw this out there. So we saw in the last mostly presidential election, but There were a number of states where there were some questions about certifying the election. What sort of evidence would you have to see to not certify an election in the state for president or for any seat, I guess?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I am not able to answer that yet. I don't know enough to be able to answer that. But I'm reading a lot of statutes and laws, and would have a better answer for you probably later in the year.
Senator, all right. Well, I appreciate you being here. Director Beecher, appreciate you delaying your start time and coming before the committee. I know that we did get you these typewritten questions just a little bit before, less than 24 hours before, and I appreciated you were able to answer almost all of them. We would appreciate the remaining answers if you could just have them written or in some other form that I can sort out to the rest of the committee members. And if we do have future questions, we will make sure that those get directly to your office. So thank you, Ms. Beecher, and thank you also to Lori Wilson here in the room, Michaela Thompson, Carol Thompson, and Mr. Thomas Flynn from the Department of Law. At this time, we'll take a brief at ease so we can have the next speaker and presenter come forward. Okay, we will now take up Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 6, sponsored by Senator Lukey Tobin, honoring the Alaska-Korea relationship. We have the sponsor of the bill, Senator Tobin, before us. Are there any questions of the committee for Senator Tobin? Are there any other comments anybody would like to make on behalf of the bill?
Lukey Tobin, for the record, Senator to District I. We just want to thank everyone for hearing this piece of legislation, and we look forward to your support.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. With that, Vice Chair Klayman.
Mr. Chair, I move to report CSSJR6, bill number 33-LS0284/U from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, State Affairs Senate committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 6, State Affairs, that is 33LS0284/U, is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Okay, I'll call the meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee back to order. Wanted to bring up just a continuation of Senate Bill 1, the hearing that we had on Tuesday, the 7th. Senator Schauer and Mr. Ogun are online, I believe. I'm not sure if Senator Schauer, if you have any comments you'd like to make on Senate Bill 1 at this time before we pass it off to your staff, Scott Ogun.
I'm not sure he's on.
Okay. Oh, it does say unavailable. Okay. Sounds like Senator Schauer was here early on and then has left, but we do have Scott Ogun, staff to Senator Schauer. If you would, for the record, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate your indulgence. I was asked to briefly go over the sponsor statement last week. I somewhat summarized that. I'm going to trust that you guys read it so we don't have to tie up your time today. I think probably I should go over the sectional analysis if that's appropriate. Section 1 amends 15-15030 to add a new paragraph that provides an official ballot must contain a watermark or seal or other watermark, seal, or other security identifier. This allows for security identifiers to include an election official signature if needed. Section 2 amends 15-15 by adding a new section, that mandates that the director shall adopt a regulation providing for a ballot security and chain of custody, requires a redundant, secure, sealed system that accounts for a location and entry that has the custody of the ballot or record from the printer until 22 months after the applicable election is certified, which happens to be federal law, by the way. Maintain strict physical chain of custody protocols using a barcode or other sufficient system, requires periodic updates to incorporate best practice chain of custody protocols, and we have actually that document in the back of your packet. If you'd be kind enough to look at it. It's called Best Practices Chain of Custody by the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. It's a very good document, and it has checklists. I encourage the division to take a look at it. Section 3 amends AS 15-15060 by adding a new subsection requiring the director to post an election hotline notice in a conspicuous place at polls. Section 4 amends 15-15250 by requiring that the ballots will be required to be voided and secured to maintain forensic evidence and strict chain of custody of all ballots. The current practice, last time I checked, they might have changed it, is that more ballots get sent out to a precinct because they don't know how many people are showing up, and those ballots can be destroyed in precinct, and we just want all the ballots to go out to come back. Section 5 amends 15-20-020, authorizing the director with administrative supervision authority to implement the use of online multi-factor authentication systems for tracking absentee ballots, and I would ask you check in your packet on the Center for Democracy and Technology publication on multi-factor authentication with elections. Section 6 amends 15-20-064 by adding a new subsection modifying early voting requirements to allow an absentee voter to vote a question ballot if they do not have sufficient proof of residency identification. The election board and candidates will have an opportunity to sufficiently determine if the voter was qualified to vote. And this particular provision was something that both sides of the aisle agreed on last session. Section 7 amends 15-20-081-ECHO to provide that a ballot received after the day of the election that is not postmarked or is postmarked after the day of the election may not be counted unless the ballot envelope is marked with the U.S. Postal Service tracking barcode, and we discussed that a little bit earlier today, sufficient to verify that the ballot was mailed on or before the day of the election. Section 8 amends 15 20
203 Bravo to close a loophole that allowed a ballot to be counted despite the failure of an absentee voting official or election supervisor to properly sign and date voters the voter certificate as an official required under 1520.061. This section requires the United States Postal Service tracking barcodes sufficient to verify that the ballot, and pardon my typo, was mailed on or before the day of the election. Section 9 amends 1520.220 Bravo by authorizing the state review board to review and count absentee ballots if the ballots have been properly cured. Ballot curing is something that can be done efficiently. I won't get into the whole spiel, but especially if it's done like with there's companies that do this now. It's called BallotTrax is one of them. There's other competitors, and they're real efficient, and it really provides an opportunity for people to vote and encourage as many people ballots to count as possible. Section 10 amends 1520.221 by adding new sections that mandate the director to establish an online multi-factor authentication system, authorize the director to procure the system from a third party, stipulates the system must be designed to allow a voter to easily use the system to a mobile electronic device. Apps must allow for a very efficient curing and tracking process. This section also outlines a procedure for curing simple ballot errors. Section 11 amends 1520.900 by adding new subsections that require the division to conduct routine forensic examinations of each precinct tabulator before and after the election, prohibits any connectivity to the internet or a cellular network. And by the way, the Dominion machines do have cell phone modems in them. Requires a strict chain of custody protocol for precinct tabulators and a separate storage device, and requires the division to provide a technical subject matter expert appointment for supervised access to all election data, algorithm, software, equipment, including precinct tabulator storage devices, voting machines, and vote tally systems. Section 12 amends AS 15800006 by adding a new section requiring the director to develop a cybersecurity program to keep election data safe. Section 13 amends 2420060, granting the Legislative Council powers to provide a contractual technical subject matter expert to conduct a full forensic audit of voting machines, tabulators, storage devices, and vote tally systems. Section 4 adds a new section to the uncodified law allowing transitional regulations. Did I say Section 4? I think I meant 14. Section 15. Section 14 of the bill has an immediate effective date to allow transitional regulations. Section 16, excluding Section 15, which is the immediate effective date, allows the rest of the bill to take effect on January 1st, 2024. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions in the last 3 minutes. We have, and you know, if you want to fire some of the ones you fired at the director, I'd be happy to give you my opinion about some of them.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Ogan at this time? Okay, well, you're off the hook.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your attention, and great day.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that we will hear both Senate Bill 1 and Senate Bill 19, which both were heard on Tuesday, and at a future time, we'll open it up to public testimony as well during that period of time. We're in a process here working with the new director of the division, Carol Beecher. You know, there's going to be some things that we agree with on the bill that Senator Schauer proposed. There's going to be some things that you disagree on the bill that I've proposed, and something will come out of the committee, and we'll work closely, very closely with the Division of Elections. So just wanted to thank Carol Beecher, the director from the division, as well as Lori Wilson for being here for the Division 1 supervisor, and other folks that have come in to testify on behalf of the two bills. With that, our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, March 14th. We will will have several bills up. I think that they're going to be they're on the calendar right now. I can't remember the numbers offhand. So at this time, at 5 p.m., I'll adjourn today's meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee.